This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Behind the Black, Bob Zimmerman is here, and he takes us again in hand and guides us to the FAA. They're speaking again. You will recall the FAA has a colorful history when it comes to Boca Chica. And yet, Bob, a very good evening to you. Revised launch window flight restrictions, Starship test flights over the Gulf of Mexico. Gulf of America, yes. What have they done, Bob? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Because the last two Starship test launches had a failure of Starship just before it reached orbit, debris came down in the Atlantic. No one was hurt. This is not a big deal, really. But because of that, it did disturb some air traffic. And the United Kingdom, whose territories, island territories, was especially impacted, had concerns. And so the FAA last week issued a revised launch window and flight restrictions for future Starship test flights out of Boca Chica, out of Texas. I've got a map on Behind the Black showing the flight path for that mission, and if you look at it, you'll see that it threads the needle between Florida and Cuba so that it really is over very few land masses. But it does go across UK islands in the Turks and the Caicos Islands, I think I'm pronouncing that right, and the Bahamas. And so these new flight restrictions, they're putting limits on when the launch window can happen so that it'll be outside peak travel periods, that because some flights will have to be rerouted, and if something goes wrong, a lot of flights are going to have to be canceled. Not a lot, but some. This same thing happened previously. This is really just an upgrade of those rules. SpaceX wants to do the ninth test flight momentarily. There had been Elon Musk said they were aiming for May 20th, but that didn't happen. The FAA has not yet issued the launch license itself. I'm not expecting the FAA to spend a lot of time delaying that. They basically are waiting for SpaceX to complete its own investigation of the previous flight failures. Once SpaceX has completed that, the FAA will rubber stamp it. This is not the Biden administration. They're not going to retype it. They're going to just say okay, and that's what they've done since Trump became president. But nonetheless, they have not yet approved it, and so SpaceX itself appears not ready yet to do that test flight. But I think it's coming, and it's likely coming before the end of May. But we'll see. We'll have to keep our fingers.
Bob, it's been a couple of months of wild news. Recover for me what they want to accomplish. Is this flight 9 or 10? I don't recall.
9. This would be flight number 9. And what they're going to want to do is what they wanted to do on flight 7 and 8, but were unable to. The main purposes of those flights was to get Starship into its low orbit so they can test it in orbit. They can test a satellite deployment system that they had put in it. They could test its heat shield characteristics as it came back down to Earth. They could test, they could refire the engine in space to test to make sure that engine will work once it's shut down and then refired again. And basically, they wanted to test Starship on a whole range of things. They were not able to do that in the previous two flights because the Starship broke up just before it reached its orbit. And this was a version 2 of Starship, so whatever changes they made to upgrade it were a problem. And so we don't know exactly what they've done to redesign it. That's proprietary. But they obviously have worked hard to try to figure out what went wrong so it won't happen again. We shall see how this plays out.
What is iSpace?
iSpace is a Japanese private company whose business model is putting lunar landers softly on the moon. They tried once with what was called Hakuto R1. It tried to land in Atlas Crater a few years ago, but unfortunately its software misjudged how where it was, and when it shut off the engine, it was still 3 kilometers in the air, and it crashed. They're trying again. They've got a orbiter right now in orbit around the moon, Resilience, and it's going to try to land on June 5th on the moon and on the near side near the top of the moon when you look at it. What's interesting about iSpace, they have a contract with NASA and with Japan Space Agency, JAXA, to do future lunar landers. However, they haven't yet successfully landed, and so the Resilience landing is a big deal for them. They, however, this week announced they have borrowed $35 million from a Japanese bank to help pay for ongoing expenses. They specifically say it's working capital. That suggests to me that their cash flow is not so good and they're borrowing money to cover their expenses while this mission flies. If this mission succeeds, they will probably be able to get contracts with some cash off the bat to plan for the later missions. If the mission fails, I think this company could be in big trouble. And so we're going to have to wait and see. Borrowing money like this is not necessarily a good thing. It indicates cash flow problems. It doesn't necessarily mean the company's going to die, but it does mean they're on shaky ground.
They're looking for a landing on June 5th. Is that still set, June 5th?
That's still the date. It's in lunar orbit right now. Everything seems to be working fine, and they're targeting June 5th. Mm-hmm. I am confident, actually, that they should succeed, but once again, this is not easy, so we have to wait and see.
I'm looking at the picture of the landing sites. It looks uniform, nothing too scary looking.
There is in fact, Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter took a picture of the landing zone. It's a relatively flat area with small craters, but nothing big. So they're trying to do a safe landing here, and there's no reason why it shouldn't be successful. That's why I'm confident.
The contracts. All right, third stage of India's rocket fails during launch. What's the significance, Bob?
India has been trying to get its launch its industry, its space agency's launch industry back up to snuff after it shut down during COVID 5 years ago, and it's been struggling to do that. This year, they hope to do about a dozen launches. The first launch was their bigger GSLV rocket in January. The rocket succeeded, but the satellite failed. It didn't get into the orbit it was supposed to. This was a satellite built by ISRO, the space agency. So their second launch this past weekend was their smaller PSLV rocket, and this rocket launch failed also. But this time the rocket itself failed. The third stage, during its engine burn, at one point it suddenly the rocket started to low go down and all telemetry disappeared. They didn't get it, suggesting an explosion, but that is a speculation. We don't know what happened, but the satellite did not make orbit and the rocket failed. So far it's been a bad year for India Space Agency. They hope to start flying unmanned test missions of their Gaganyaan manned capsule before the end of this year. It will use their heavy lift Mark III rocket, which is a different rocket. But these issues at ISRO suggest that they better take a close look at what's going on here. There might be quality control problems. This could be a good thing for its private space. The Modi government is trying to shift. It's trying to do what NASA has done, shift from having ISRO build everything and own everything to having the private sector provide, and ISRO is merely a customer. They've had a lot of political resistance to that at ISRO. These failures could actually be politically helpful in making that shift happen, but we'll have to wait and see.
Kazakhstan, local rumor, Baikonur. What's happening, Bob?
All right, Baikonur is the spaceport that Russia/Soviet Union has used since 1957 to launch humans and most manned missions, most space missions into orbit. However, Baikonur is not in Russia anymore. It was part of the Soviet Union, but when the Soviet Union fell apart, Baikonur became part of Kazakhstan, which is not Russia. And so Russia has been leasing this facility for decades now, since 91, since the fall of the Soviet Union. There have been rumors in the local media in Kazakhstan that Russia was going to leave Baikonur and exit its lease before it expires in 2050, and maybe leave sometime before the end of this decade. Kazakhstan is denying this. I don't know, really, if there's some truth to this. Once ISS is retired, Russia will have no place to go in orbit with its manned people. It doesn't have its own space station even close to getting built. It is not partnered with anybody else very well. It's not going to be tied in with any of the commercial stations that the U.S. and Europe is building. And so where are they going to fly? Which means they don't need Kazakhstan. They also have been developing Vostochny and Plesetsk spaceports, the Vostochny especially. They might decide to save the lease money here and abandon Baikonur entirely. Don't know this for a fact. We'll have to stay tuned. But these rumors do suggest, I think, that Baikonur, historic as it is, might be on the way out.
But Baikonur has a lot of advantages if somebody moved in there and made it a spaceport, Bob.
I would suspect that Russia is not going to look kindly at any outside Western use of that spaceport, and Kazakhstan's going to recognize that. So one of the reasons I don't think Baikonur is going to be abandoned is because Kazakhstan wants it in use. It makes money, and Russia could use it. And Russia, if it leaves, creates a vacuum which it doesn't want someone else to grab. So I think Russia will stay. But we have to wait and see. Russia is getting, it doesn't have a lot of money, and it's being bankrupt by its stupid Ukraine war. And so that changes everything in its planning.
Varda, you like this company. What is it they do, Bob? And you've got a video.
Yes. All right. So Varda sends up capsules for periods of time in space and then has them come back. And while in orbit, they can either do manufacturing in the capsule, such as pharmaceuticals. In the most recent third capsule that just came down over the past week, that capsule was actually used by the military to test sensors, control sensors, during hypersonic flight upon return. They took advantage of the orbit speeds you come down from space to test hypersonic technology. That's how they made the money after that. That was their customer here. So they released a video show from inside the capsule as it was descending. And during the video, one of my readers, Rex Rudenow, he told me that on that video, you could see another spacecraft flying below the Varda capsule in the window. The Varda capsule is rotating about, so it swings in and swings out. But three times, there's this spacecraft below the craft. And it turns out that other video, it's kind of cool to look at. I've got it linked on Behind the Black. You can see you can see it's two solar panels on either side. What that is the service module that Rocket Lab built for the Varda capsule. It provided the solar power and the service and the engines for Varda's capsule. And so after it fired its deorbit burn, the two spacecraft separated, and the way it was separated allowed the service module to drop down quicker and out of the way below the Varda capsule as the Varda capsule was returning to Earth. And so you could see it, and it's just kind of cool. Varda does good work, John, and this is just another example of it, as well as Rocket Lab, I should say.
More Artemis Accords. Who signed up, Bob?
Norway became the 55th nation to sign the Artemis Accords. Now pretty much the entire Scandinavian peninsula has joined this American alliance to do space. The bottom line question still remains is whether the Artemis Accords are going to be used the way they were originally intended to get around the private property restrictions of the Outer Space Treaty, or whether they will be used as the Biden administration was trying to do it, to reinforce the restrictions of the Outer Space Treaty on private property. The Artemis Accords were conceived by Trump to get around those restrictions, but in the Biden administration, that was changed. Under this new Trump administration, it's still unclear whether or not this is going to happen. And it's not a priority for the State Department, I'm sure, but it is definitely an issue.
Who administers the Artemis Accords? Who's
Artemis Accords are bilateral agreements between the United States and another nation. So we've now signed that agreement with 55 other nations, and these nations will want to work with us when they sign this. So basically, the United States is the lead. What we decide, everyone else is going to follow. They will, of course, have their import and political negotiations, but what we say is going to be what goes. And they didn't sign with us because they disagreed with the idea of private property in space. They signed because they agreed with that. So that's up to the Trump administration stuff.
And does it apply to commercial space as well as big space? In other words,
this has to do with the exploration of the planets and the moon and the asteroids. That's what it has to do with. So it's initially government, but the goal here is to make it possible for commercial operations to invest in space and be comfortable with the legal restrictions on them. Right now, you can't own property on another planet based on the Outer Space Treaty, which puts investments at risk. We want to be able to establish our laws in space so that private companies and private individuals can own property. And so that's the issue that has to be settled.
Bob Zimmerman, Behind the Black.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.